talking about gutting this fishery. This is extremely heavy-handed stuff.
The worry over low numbers of king salmon in Southeast. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, January 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, more barrels of oil are flowing through taps.
When we see 2 years in a row of increase, it gives us lots of optimism for the state of Alaska and also for pipeline operations going forward.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Fishermen in Sitka are pushing back against a proposed king salmon conservation plan that could impose deep restrictions on fishing seasons in 2018. The local Fish and Game Advisory Committee instead has offered some strategies of its own for protecting Chinook, returning to three major Southeast river systems. They're calling it management with a scalpel instead of a sledgehammer. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has the story.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game released a set of proposed action plans for the jeopardized king salmon stocks on the Friday before Christmas. In order to beat the December 28th submission deadline for written comments to the Alaska Board of Fisheries, the Sitka Fish and Game Advisory Committee, which is comprised of local fishermen and harvesters, hastily convened on the evening of the 27th to draft a letter.
Well, now listen carefully. This is going to be important.
This is Committee Chair Eric Jordan reading a draft of the letter to the audience of about 20 commercial trawlers and fisheries managers. He's about to throw down a big concession.
Notwithstanding any remaining seasonal guideline harvest level, close the winter troll fishery in all our waters of Southeast Alaska beginning stat week 17.
Statistical weeks are how the state tracks fishing data beginning at the new year. Stat week 17 this coming season begins on April 15th exactly. Historically, the latter half of April has been some of the best winter fishing in Southeast, and prices for kings caught that time of year have topped $10 per pound. But it's also the time when Sitka trawlers catch a small but statistically significant amount of king salmon bound for the Unuk River near Ketchikan, which has now been designated a stock of concern by state fisheries managers. And that's why the Sitka Advisory Committee was ready to bite the bullet on two of the best fishing weeks of the winter, says Jordan.
If we're going to go by the best data we have, and we have to bring the tough news to you that we catch enough Unuk River king salmon in the Sitka area, mostly right out here off the Cape, in the last part of April, that if we want to contribute to saving those king salmon, that'd be the best time to do it.
What Jordan and other members of the committee, and probably the entire Southeast troll fleet, would like to avoid is another season like 2017, when precipitously low returns to the Unuk, Chilkat, and king salmon rivers forced managers to close most spring fisheries near those rivers and to close the region-wide summer king salmon fishery after only 4 days. On top of that, the traditional August opener was never held, and winter fishing was opened in October with the expectation that it would close in mid-March, about 6 weeks early. The three action plans proposed by Fish and Game for 2018 all contain the possibility of similar restrictions in 2018. Kevin Pfeiffer, a troller for 10 years out of Petersburg and Sitka, told department managers present that he would not have got into fishing if someone told him that he'd be unemployed for 4 months a year.
That's so much downtime that a guy's got to get another job. You're talking about gutting this fishery. This is extremely heavy-handed stuff that's going on here. There's no way that young fishermen are going to get into this business if they can't count on Fishing Game to look for the less abundant areas to let us fish.
And that's exactly the angle taken by the Sitka Advisory Committee as it wordsmithed its letter to the Board of Fisheries. The committee suggested amending the department's proposed action plans to eliminate the broad strokes, like delaying the start of summer trolling by a week or more, and to focus instead on targeting the times and areas when king salmon are known to be migrating into the three problem rivers. The committee also proposed adding language to ensure that the August opening would happen no matter what, and that it would target 30% of the kings allocated for summer fishing, since by that time all of Southeast's spawning kings would have made it to their home rivers, if they were going to make it at all. That's a significant point. No one on the advisory committee or in the audience denied that there was a serious problem with returns to the Chilkat, Unic, and King Salmon rivers. Rather, there was consensus that there was a way to work around those fish and still keep fishermen in business. Deb Lyons, a troller and executive director of the Pacific Salmon Treaty Coalition, supported the efforts of the committee to fine-tune the action plans.
Let's use a scalpel instead of a sledgehammer. If there's a place to provide opportunity, let's try to find that. If there's places where opportunity is being eliminated, make sure it's justified and you weigh the cost.
The Sitka Advisory Committee unanimously approved its proposed recommendations to the Board of Fish, including ending the winter fishery 2 weeks early, and delivered its letter by the December 28th deadline. The letter does not address sport fishing restrictions, as bag limits and seasons will not be set until the Pacific Salmon Commission releases its annual Abundance Index, or AI, later this spring. The Alaska State Board of Fisheries will meet in Sitka beginning January 11th and is scheduled to take up salmon issues on January 15th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
For the second year in a row, there was an increase in the amount of oil flowing down the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. That's according to its operator, Alyeska Pipeline Service Company. Alyeska announced today that the pipeline's average throughput went up by about 10,000 barrels per day in 2017 compared to 2016. Michelle Egan is a spokesperson for Alyeska.
When we see 2 years in a row of increase, it gives us lots of optimism for the state of Alaska and also for pipeline operations going forward.
North Slope oil production declined steadily starting in the late 1980s. Before 2016, the last uptick in pipeline throughput was in 2002. Back then, it carried more than a million barrels per day. In 2017, it was closer to half that amount. The pipeline was designed to carry much higher volumes of oil. In 2011, Alyeska released a study raising questions about whether it can keep operating below about 300,000 barrels per day. Egan says 2 years of increased throughput gives Alyeska some breathing room.
Decline and low throughput creates a lot of technical challenges for us. So anything that can happen to slow that is a big help, and increases are very useful.
Mark Wiggin, Deputy Commissioner at the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, says the increase is due to a combination of factors. Wiggin says newer oil fields west of Prudhoe Bay are doing better than expected. He also says companies have managed to get oil out of old fields like Prudhoe Bay more efficiently.
I think the takeaway is that the industry figured out how, in a very, very challenging price environment, to do some good work.
The state of Alaska projects North Slope oil production will continue to go up this year, but then begin to decline again in 2019. Anchorage recorded its first homicide of the new year in the first hour of 2018. At about 12:16 a.m., Anchorage police responded to shots fired in downtown Anchorage. They arrived to find a male victim with multiple gunshot wounds. He was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. The victim was later identified as 39-year-old Timothy Smith. APD is looking for witnesses and information on the occupants of a silver Chevy Trailblazer that was in the area at the time of the shooting. In 2017, a record number of homicides happened in Anchorage. An Anchorage man has been sentenced to years in prison for selling huge quantities of a powerful prescription opioid. The U.S. District Attorney's Office announced today that a federal judge has sentenced 36-year-old Spree Sim Alimi to more than 11 years behind bars. Last year, Alimi pleaded guilty to possession with intent to distribute large quantities of oxycodone. The District Attorney's Office says a search warrant on different properties tied to Alimi turned up more than 4,000 pills, estimated to be worth about $150,000. Officials also confiscated a Dodge Viper, firearms, and $90,000 in cash. An investigation found that Alimi would sometimes conduct drug transactions through the credit card machine at his automotive business in Anchorage. As part of his guilty plea, Alimi forfeited most of the cash along with the vehicle. The investigation involved resources from the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency, Alaska State Troopers, and Air Force's Office of Special Prosecutions. Opioids like oxycodone are closely connected with surging rates of addiction and overdose in Alaska and nationwide. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a young Bethel man wins the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race.
Finally, he got first place.
It was pretty good, hard, fast all the way.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station.
A father's body has been recovered from the Kuskokwim River after he and his family fell through a marked open hole the night of New Year's Eve. Bethel Search and Rescue says five survivors are okay and urges everyone to use overland trails to travel upriver. Search and Rescue pulled Mark Casile's body from the Kuskokwim around 2 o'clock Monday afternoon. Bethel Search and Rescue President Mike Riley was there.
After the prayer was over, we thanked each other and everybody for all the good work everybody was doing for this quick recovery of Mark. And then we load them in a body bag and brought them back to Bethel.
They released the body to the Alaska State Troopers. The night before, on New Year's Eve, Mark Casile and his family had fallen through an open hole. The night was calm and the hole marked with blue reflective tape signaling open water. But open water can look indistinguishable from glare ice. There were six travelers, Casile, his sister-in-law, his wife, and their three young children. Mike Riley says the children appear to be between 9 and 14 years old.
I do believe they were on one snowmobile towing a sled.
The family lives in Bethel and was heading to Akiachek, where they're originally from. The survivors were able to pull themselves onto the ice and call for help. Troopers report the family saw Casile go, quote, into the water and did not see him get out. Bethel Search and Rescue heard about the accident from Bethel Police just before 10 p.m. Riley says searchers reached the family within 45 minutes.
They were very hyperthermic. They were all wet.
The responders used their own clothing to warm the family.
They gave them their jackets, their coats. One of our members actually took their shoes off and gave it to one of the boys.
The searchers transported the survivors to Bethel, where two ambulances were waiting to carry them to the hospital. Monday morning, volunteers from Bethel Search and Rescue returned to the site with hooks and drag bars. They gave the equipment to volunteers from Akiachek and Kuithluk to recover Kasile's body. Riley says more than 60 people helped.
Three hooks grabbed them after about an hour and a half of dragging, and that's how we brought them up.
The crews then blocked the trail with the open hole about 8 miles upriver of Bethel.
The trail by the bluff is completely cut off for everybody's safety. The glare ice is very hard to read on open water, and that's the reason probably why this happened.
Riley urges everyone traveling upriver from Bethel to use the overland trail from Hanger Lake to Akiachek. The parents of a woman who died a year ago on January 1, 2017, are suing the Fairbanks Police Department, the Alaska Department of Corrections, and an Alaska nightclub, alleging blame in the death of their daughter. The Fairbanks Daily Newsminer reports Michaela Keitlinger died after she was arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence of alcohol and was released on her own recognizance. She walked away from the Fairbanks Correctional Center about 6 a.m. and was later struck by a vehicle. An autopsy revealed her blood alcohol level was 0.157. The legal limit for driving is 0.08. Keitlinger drank at Kodiak Jack's on New Year's Eve 2016. Deborah Keitlinger says her daughter made mistakes, but personnel at the nightclub, police department, and jail did also. The entities are being sued for wrongful death. Friends and family are mourning the loss of an Alaska Marine scientist killed in a car crash in Juneau. Michelle Ridgway was an avid deep sea diver who did things her way. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
Deep Worker 6 is in view above the
lifelong Alaskan was part of a Greenpeace-sponsored expedition into Zebchug Canyon. This canyon in the Bering Sea is both longer and deeper than the Grand Canyon. The submarine team's 2007 exploits were featured in a short video posted on YouTube.
Michelle Ridgway is amongst seven deep water subpilots that will dive to the canyon depths.
Wow. Woohoo! This is great. Oh, there are so many squid in the vicinity.
Ridgway was a private person, but an outspoken conservationist. In 2013, testifying before an Alaska Senate committee, she opens on a personal note about turning 18.
I had just used my first PFD check to get exactly what I wanted, my scuba diving license, so I could spend the rest of my life being a research diver. That's all I've ever wanted, and that's all I've ever done.
Ridgway was alarmed and tried to convince state lawmakers not to roll back a citizens' initiative that prevented cruise ships from discharging wastewater less than 3 miles from shore.
I have dived in this state from Metlakatla to Barrow and Nome hundreds of times. I spend a tremendous amount of my life underwater, diving on the water, down to the depths of the oceans that we can reach by submarine in Alaska. And I wish that this morning I could show you what I see. I could tell you what we've learned. It is a phenomenally rich ocean we live in, and it matters a great deal what we do to it.
Her closest family members recalled a woman who never pulled her punches. Her younger brother, Mark Ridgway of Juneau, said his big sister was, put simply, a badass.
Just had a big family debate. My mother and father didn't quite take to the term immediately when we would bounce it around, and a friend of ours looked it up on the Urban Dictionary to show them that indeed, yes, the definition in the Urban Dictionary fits my sister to a T.
And her passion for the water started at a young age.
We grew up on the water in Ketchikan and swimming around in tide pools, and she was always fascinated by it. And she took that fascination and turned it into a lifelong accomplishment.
Other marine scientists knew her as a hard-charging personality who was fiercely independent. Pete Hagen, deputy director of the NOAA Marine Labs at Auk Bay, said it was remarkable how much she accomplished as her own boss.
It's difficult in this line of business when a lot of times larger companies or agencies are taking care of things, and you have to hustle a bit. And she was a hustler, no question about that. But Michelle was passionate in what she did, and she was an excellent communicator. And anyway, it's a real loss all the way around.
She was also an educator who regularly worked with school kids on the Pribilof Islands. Her brother said her work with children made him the proudest.
Well, she's been helpful in making policy and decisions at very high levels. I think her most important achievement, me personally, is that there's a lot of kids out there who have a greater appreciation of the world they're in because she was around.
Michelle Ridgway lived near Auk Bay, north of Juneau. She was fatally injured Friday afternoon in a single car crash about 20 miles north of the capital city. She was medevaced to Seattle, but never recovered. She was 54. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Athletes from around the nation are in Anchorage this week competing for a spot on the Olympic cross-country ski team. U.S. national races begin tomorrow morning at Kincaid Park. There are four races in all, two freestyle and two classic style events for men and women. Most of the athletes that will represent the U.S. and South Korea in February are skiing in Europe right now. But if an athlete in Anchorage does well enough this week, it could lead to a nomination for the Olympic team. Anchorage skier Holly Brooks did just that in 2010. That's the last time U.S. Nationals were held in Anchorage, and her results here earned her a spot on the team that skied in the Vancouver Olympics. The official Olympic team nominations will be announced later this month. U.S. Nationals kicks off at Kincaid Park tomorrow at 10 a.m. with the freestyle distance event. The races, which take place in Anchorage through Monday, are free and open to the public. Sled dog racing season officially began on the Kuskokwim this weekend. After 2 weeks of delays due to warm weather and poor trails, temperatures plunged, ice hardened, snow fell a bit, and on Saturday, the Kuskokwim 300 season opener kicked off. Teams from Bethel and surrounding villages competed along the 35-mile trail. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur was there on the windy ice of Hanger Lake.
It's a gray day. The sun hasn't fully come up yet. It's like 10 degrees outside. People are bundled up. We're on Hanger Lake on the ice. There's a layer of snow. Cars, trucks are out just on the edges of the ice. It's not strong enough further out. Their headlights on.
Soon it's time to begin. 17 teams make a line across the frozen lake for the mass start.
All the dogs are jumping up and down. The mushers are crunching down. They have their hands on their brakes that's stuck into the ice. The handlers are holding the lead dogs. They're jumping up and down, and they're going!
One team veers into another. A sled crashes to its side, throwing off its musher, but he quickly jumps back on. Soon, they all fade to dark silhouettes and then disappear in the snow. About 2.5 hours later, the first musher arrives. Mary Simon hugs her son, Maurice Andrews of Bethel, for winning his first local race.
Finally, he got first place.
Congratulations. How was the race?
It was pretty good, hard, fast all the way.
How did it feel to be out first race of the season?
Oh, it felt awesome, man. Finally good to be out.
Yeah, what's it been like these last couple weeks? It was scheduled, it was delayed, delayed.
Hectic, man, hectic. Just a lot of waiting game from there, waiting game.
Tell me about your team here.
They're coming out of Glare Ice Kennels. Got about 40 dogs in our kennel. We did good today.
3 minutes after Andrews' win, Greg Larson of Neposkiak arrives in second place.
Oh, it was lots of fun. Always fun, no matter how the trail is.
How did your dogs do?
Oh, I think they performed really, really good.
16 teams finished the race. The season opener paid out $20,000 to the first 15. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The Alaska Zoo announced today that one of its main attractions has died. Apoon, the polar bear, died suddenly over the weekend. In a Facebook post, the Alaska Zoo said the bear had shown no signs of poor health. A necropsy was done to determine a cause of death, but so far there are no final results. The announcement quickly garnered an outpouring of attention on social media. Facebook comments were filled with condolences and personal pictures of the bear over the years. Apoon came to the zoo in 1998 as a cub and was about 20 years old when she died. That's roughly half the life expectancy of a polar bear in captivity, according to the zoo. She is survived by one other polar bear at the Alaska Zoo. Loneliness and isolation can be a big problem for seniors in Alaska. Many older people are often far from family members, and kids are far from their grandparents. In Sitka, the local pioneer home for seniors has found a solution for both problems, housing a local preschool right next door. Reporting for Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk, KCAW's Catherine Rose has the story.
Tucked away behind the Sitka Pioneer Home, which provides state-run senior housing and care, is a cozy yellow building. The entryway is filled with tiny jackets and boots. These old nurses' quarters now house Mount Edgecombe Preschool. Twice a week, the students visit residents. They read stories and sing songs to the elders. Together, the young children and the older adults solve puzzles and play games like balloon toss.
There it went. Get it.
That's Pioneer Home resident Anna Winters. She says spending time with the kids gives them a big boost.
I love to see those kids come in every week. It's fun, and they give us a little bit of craziness that we can take too.
A little craziness and a lot of affection.
Well, we've got some of them that hug, and I like huggers. And they make you feel good. They make you feel like a human. I mean, they make you feel so good inside and outside.
Resident Galen Instanes appreciates story time because it helps him combat boredom.
It keeps us entertained all the time. In fact, it's kind of surprising how disciplined they are. Pretty sharp, I think.
Pioneer Home Activities Coordinator Sky Workman says the change she witnesses in residents when the children arrive is palpable.
Brings a connectedness and builds relationships and brings joy and growth, and benefits from that are just so huge. It's kind of immeasurable.
It makes the residents feel more connected to the larger community as well, even if they don't have any family in town. Research shows that increased socialization can decrease loneliness and reduce the mental decline that often happens when living in a nursing facility. Mount Edgecombe Preschool has existed for 30 years, but has only been connected to the Pioneer Home since 2003. Preschool Director Lori Whitmill says the shared time isn't just important for the residents. Her students gain a lot from it, too.
Yeah, our main hope is that they just feel comfortable and get a sense of appreciation and enjoyment for older people as competent, interesting, fun human beings, and so that we can do our own little part to kind of combat the ageism that I think is so prevalent in our culture.
Some research suggests kids who have early contact with elders are less likely to engage in stereotyping based on age. Whitmill says that many children in Sitka have grandparents in the lower 48, which makes them a bit unfamiliar with the aging process.
And a lot of them do start our program over there feeling a little nervous, not quite sure they want to do it. But now at this point, our kids are excited if it's their turn to go and disappointed if it's not. So yeah. I think we're making progress. And in fact, after one of our recent outings over there, as we were walking back, one of the children said, "Did you notice how happy the grandmas and grandpas were?" And then another child said, "I think they really like us."
Resident Anna Winters definitely likes them. After the balloon toss, she was sad to see the children go.
Come back again, please.
Winters doesn't need to worry. They'll be back next week. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Robert Woolsey and Catherine Rose in Sitka, Elizabeth Harbaugh, Emily Russell, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, and Jacob Resnick in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.